Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Savage Nation. Monday, Blue Monday, Savage Nation. What do you think I'm going to talk about today? Myself?
Nah.
Not really. You know everything about me and more, so why talk about me? I think I'll talk about the world. Shots fired at huge election protest in Tehran. What can we say about it? The whole thing is fixed. You think there really was a reform candidate? The people don't want a throwback regime in Iran. There's no question about it. The girls would rather not have their bodies mutilated, et cetera, by the psycho mullahs who have hijacked Iran. We know that. It's encouraging to see protests, but you know what's going to happen to the protesters. There's another great article on my website that I have to talk about by Professor Ellis Washington that appeared first over the weekend on WorldNet Daily. It's on michaelsavage.com. And it is about me. It says, Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England. And I'm going to talk about that today because it's an important story both for me and for you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I really want to talk about the world through a frying pan, though. And the reason I want to talk about the world through a frying pan on the Savage Nation is because if you have an open heart and an open mind, you can see the world through a raindrop. I saw it through a frying pan because I went today. Well, let me back up a bit. Last night I cooked a paella. I got fed up with eating out. I can't take it. It's not the restaurants. It's not the owners. It's not the food. I realized why I don't like restaurants. It's listening to other people talk. My problem is that I cannot tune things out. My problem is I'm in the radio business and I have very sharp ears. My problem is that I actually hear what people are saying. My problem is I hear the conversations coming from other tables and I lose my ability to eat. So I decided to start cooking at home again. I know you want to talk about the Obama health care plan. Please give me a break. I'd rather talk about diapers and how to change diapers than anything about Obama. Watch Obama run. Here's Obama apologizing in the Middle East. Watch Obama's new dog. Here's Obama having a meal. Look at Obama on Broadway. Here's Obama running. Here's Obama playing. Leave me alone already. Get the coloring book. You know what I mean? Get the Obama coloring book and just leave me out of it. So as I say, last night I decided to cook. Now, you got to understand, if you cook at home, it's an all-day process. First, you have to shop in the morning. Then you have to think about what you're going to do, and blah, blah, blah. So last night I cooked a dish that I've perfected over the years called paella. Many of you know what it is. It's basically a Spanish, you know, rice dish. On the one hand, it's very simple to cook. On the other hand, it's very complex to cook like anything else. I mean, a scrambled egg is a scrambled egg is a scrambled egg? No. Because there's a way to make a scrambled egg that's not like a scrambled egg. It's called piperati. It's a Spanish scrambled egg that takes about 40 minutes to make. I made that in the morning. I realized since I enjoy food so much, I would cook paella. So what I did was, by the way, Spanish is all of a sudden in. Spanish is into Italian. Everyone's getting a paella pan. They don't know what to do with it, but they got one hanging in the kitchen. So I cook paella, and I use the pan I've had for 30 years. It's not a paella pan, by the way. It's a very large stainless steel skillet with a glass top. And I'll tell you my secret in a minute. But today I went into one of those fancy cooking stores that has all these items that you think you need but you never use. And I remember my mother cooked on a four-burner electric stove in a kitchen you could hardly walk through, and she turned out three gourmet meals a day, twice a day if she had to, on four electric burners with aluminum pots. But we go into these stores and we buy thousands of dollars worth of kitchenware that we never use. So I went in and was thinking of cheating on my 30-year-old skillet. I was looking at new varieties of the same pan. Some were deeper, some were shinier. Some had elaborate scroll work on them. Some had incredible handles on them. And the more I thought about it, the more I rejected each new item. I said, well, what's wrong with the pan I've got? It's worked for 30 years. I think I'll just keep it. Well, an elderly lady who works at the store and I had a chat about frying pans. And so she showed me the varieties of stainless steel skillets. And then she showed me the latest variety of skillet. And she said, I said, but that's a non-stick surface. I don't want that. She said, yes, but this is a non-toxic non-stick surface. It doesn't release any particles. And I said, well, my body has gotten used to these non-stick particles. And I don't think my body would do very well without an occasional particle of non-stick surface in my cells. And we both had a big laugh over that. And I said, you know, you and I grew up in the same generation. Apparently today they're afraid of everything. There are so many filters, filtered air, filtered water, filtered words, filtered teaching, filtered thoughts, so that when a child is exposed to a single bad word, they fall apart crying and wonder where mommy is. They can't even play tag now with big mommy watching over them. The police state of mommy. We both laughed over that as well. Then I told her a story of a time when I was a child and my father took me by the hand through the meanest streets of New York's Lower East Side where he had a small store. And if I recall, it was during the polio epidemic. And he said to me, don't worry about it. By exposing you to all of these germs, you're not going to get polio. Of course, I didn't get polio, thank God. But the fact of the matter is, recent studies have shown that children who grow up in houses that have the least amount of dust and the least amount of antigens are generally the sickliest. That is precisely because, as my father taught me, children who are not exposed to various microorganisms or antigens and don't develop the capacity to resist them when they are. In fact, it reminds me of another story, which was the arrival of the European explorers into the South Pacific. Hardy men like Greek gods. Healthy, hardy Greek men like gods were the locals, particularly in the Marquesas, a place I've been to many years ago. The men looked like, just like Adonis. So the seamen from Europe arrive, and they bring various European diseases that the local people in these islands had never been exposed to. And subsequently, 90% of the population acquires the disease and dies. I think it was, I'm not exact, I don't want to guess wrongly, I've forgotten by now. The point is they had no immunity to this disease, although they were strong as gods, because they had not developed any immunity to the new diseases that were brought in by the European seamen. They got the diseases and died. Same thing. You need to expose yourself and your children to various and sundry. And so here we are coming full circle. Which frying pan should I buy? The lady and I then went over to the ironware section, and she said, aha, now that's the stuff that the West was built on. Yeah, and I said, I remember the days when it was said we needed ironware, cookingware, in order to get a bit of iron in our food. She said, yep, that's where true grit came from. The men had steel in their bodies, and we had a laugh over that as well. And I said to her, you can see the world through a frying pan if you look carefully enough. And she said, is that your next book? And I said, wait a minute, do you know who I am? She said, no. And I replied, well, I'm a famous author and broadcaster. She said, well, I'll have to look for that title. I said, I think you'll be waiting quite a while for it, as I walked out of the frying pan store. That's it. Well, what do you want, something profound? I gave you something simple. That's all. Now, you want to do politics? What do you want to talk about? Islam? Iran? Oh, wait, here's a nice little story for all of you who love Turban Durban. Turban Durban, remember him? The wonderful, nice, soft-spoken Senator Durban from... isn't he from Michigan? Illinois. Barry Obama's homeland. Turban Durban, who called our troops Nazis and stormtroopers, it turns out used insider information to cash out of a tanking stock market. After meeting with the head of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury Department, he sold his stocks. Now, in a saner time where we had a modicum of decency left in American politics, Turban Durban would be in a pair of handcuffs today. But today, Turban Durban will get away with it. Because, as I said, if Arnold Rothstein could fix the 1918 World Series, why should you assume that they couldn't fix the last presidential election? I'll be right back. boiled through a frying pan. That's right. That's right. Make your own paella. First of all, no one uses saffron in a restaurant. It's too expensive. What they use are coloring matters and cheap crocus rather than the actual saffron. I have a lot of good saffron, and the paella is good, but you don't want to eat it too. I mean, saffron's hard to eat every day. What I love is it's basically a peasant fisherman's dish. They turn everything into, they turn into a gourmet this, gourmet that. You have to buy $5 million worth of products to make basically rice and whatever seafood the fisherman caught and threw into the pan cooked on a wood fire. Everything they turn into a shtick. Like, you got to be a genius to make it. I lived in Spain for a while. Remember, they made the workers. They made a fire out of some wood and whatever they found on the beach. They had a rusty old pan. They threw in some rice. They toasted it. Then they threw in whatever, this shellfish. They all mixed it together, whatever they could find in, a little of this, a little of that. Then they threw in the rice and covered it, and that's the end of it. And, you know, now everybody's an expert on paella. But I don't know if you want to talk about politics. I could do it. I mean, I have my own little trick. I don't think I'm going to give it to you. You know that they say that the most desirable kind of paella, a rice dish, is when it's toasted on the bottom. You know how the kids always like to eat the skin of a turkey? They always want the turkey skin, right? The crisper, the better. And we used to eat it when we were young. Now, I don't throw the fat away. Throw the skin away. Everything, all the good parts, throw away. Throw the feet away. Throw the fat away. Don't bring the gizzards home. I would rather it be made in a factory. I want a stainless steel turkey, you know, from the imaginary kitchen that had no guts. But anyway, so it's the same with the rice. Theoretically, the bottom should be caramelized. The bottom of the rice on the pan, the most prized part of the dish is the caramelized rice on the bottom. Not black, not burnt, but caramelized rice. Very hard to do because usually if you cook it sufficiently, it'll burn on the bottom in order to cook the top, no matter how many times you stir it. So I developed my own trick, which I'm not going to tell you. I think I'll sell the advice in a cookbook. I don't know what I want to talk about. I mean, leave me alone already. I drank an old bottle of wine. I got a mild headache. I can't drink wine this time. Yeah, it's terrible. I have the greatest wine collection of my life. I finally built it up. I can't drink any of it. I'm still back to beer and vodka. And I try to change it. All right, there's a bottle that you found that you used to drink. Wonderful white wine, a smasher on me. You wouldn't believe it all night long. A nightmare headache. But that's not why I don't want to do politics. What do you want me to say? What's there to say that you don't already know? North Korea is threatening nuclear war, and we're doing nothing. We're talking about socialized medicine. Obama rushes to Chicago to tell the doctors why lawsuits against doctors are good. And they boo him, and they cut the booze out of MSNBC. You hear this? The media is more controlled here than it is in Iran. At least they can protest in Iran after a presidential election. We had Acorn fix the election. No one said a word. If you say anything, they call you Nazi here in the country. I got mail? I don't want any mail. Did that come through on the microphone? No? Did it? I don't know what you want to talk about. I mean, I can do politics. North Korea. Every day threatens nuclear war. We know what it is. I know what it is. China. The junkyard dog is called North Korea. Make it growl. To frighten anyone in the administration who says anything about the Chinese currency manipulations or their dumping of products on America, destroying our manufacturing base. So the next day, threatens another nuclear war. And I love Hillary Clinton, a really functional Secretary of State. We've passed the law that's full of no teeth. It's like a toothless old woman, the what they passed in the UN. He really cares what they say in the UN. I'm not depressed out of all of this. Whatever happens, happens. I become fatalistic at this point. I expect the worst. That's all. I expect the worst out of my government and out of the world. So therefore, whatever happens, happens. You think it can't happen here? It is happening here. Everything you ever feared about America is now happening to this country. When I woke up last week and I saw George Soros in China giving a speech on the health of the Chinese economy and why the yuan is a better currency than the U.S. dollar, I said, okay, put two and two together. Let's put two and two together. Did he short the dollar? Is he trying to destroy the U.S. currency? I don't know. Ask Timothy Geithner. He's a genius. He runs the U.S. Treasury. He's your protector of the currency. He's so smart he had to rent his house out in one of the five towns in New York. Timothy Geithner, U.S. Treasury Secretary, can't even stay in his own house. He'll protect you. Let's go to the next genius, The man who runs the Federal Reserve, another reliable source. Yeah. Well, let's go to the next one, the next professor who can't run a lemonade stand, let alone a souvlaki stand. A stainless steel hot dog stand in Manhattan is more complex to run than you would imagine. I can guarantee you if Obama was told, I'll tell you what, we want to see if you really know what you're talking about. Most of us don't trust the word you say. So here we're going to, here's a hot dog stand for 3 months. What we want you to do is run it at a profit. He said to you, what's a profit? I don't know what a profit is. All I've done is push paper all my life and give people the wind, the hot air. All my life I threw hot air and wind, and look at it, I'm president. That's why I'd rather talk about the world through a frying pan. Because if talk about the world in a frying pan, at least I made a meal I could eat. And the beauty of cooking at home is you can overeat, which is a pleasure. It's not the money to save. I'm a very generous tipper. I usually leave 50%, whatever. Because I feel bad. I was a waiter once, busboy, lifeguard, factory worker, you name it. Most of the liberals are the worst tippers on the planet. 3% they leave. Carradine, did you hear that story? They found him with the red wig and they you heard the story? Okay, then they hire that wonderful lawyer, Garagos. I don't know if he won a case yet in the last 5 years. Another famous lawyer wins nothing. What did he win? They hire a lawyer to say he didn't hang himself in a closet with a red wig and fishnet stockings. It was all made up by a kung fu society. He didn't do it to himself. You hear? You hear this? I never heard anything like it. The Thai tabloid press released pictures of David Carradine in a wig and fishnets hanging in a closet. In the Thai, the police. Terrible. I hope it's not true, to be honest with you. I don't really know. But if you read the story of what the wives said, they left him for kinky this, kinky that. But he seemed like a regular guy, depressed. He had a depression, and he used this probably to fight his depression. So what? It's his business. Who was he hurting? And he went to a bar in Los Angeles, the same bar every night, ran up an $80 bill and left $2 every night. You hear? What's with the stiffing people? Who leaves $2?
Savage.
Yes, it's me and I'm in love again. Had no love and say you know when. You know I love you. Yes, I do. And I'm saving all my loving just for you. Need your loving and I need it bad. Just like a dog when he's going
mad. That's my radio show. Right over my left shoulder. I got a picture of my father above me, my brother below him, and Fats to the... Go ahead, sing it, man. You know what this is like? I decided I was going through a phase. I think I've come out of it. This is what I was trying to tell you last week. Is like you can get depressed, and if you live through it, just ride it out like a storm. You're going to come out of it okay. Just don't use drugs because you're never going to come out of your depression. They're only going to make you worse. And so this is like raking sand. You know, years ago I read that Zen masters at a certain point in their life, if they lived, let's say, in a house with a walled garden, they'd get up every morning and they'd go out in their garden, and they had a garden of sand, and they would take a rake to the sand, and every day they would rake the sand a certain way to create a certain pattern. And that's what they did. They raked the sand. They say, well, what are they, crazy? In many ways, many of our lives are like raking sand when you think about it, particularly if you're lucky enough to live have a life that's rather regular. I try to tell you that a regular life is to be revered. The super exciting life at a certain point is to be avoided. Now, I've read many biographies as I was growing up. In fact, I read too many biographies. I try to model myself on too many people until I put down all the books and said, you know what, just lead your life because you got to throw the books away. But I was an avid reader of biographies. I don't remember. Tolstoy by Troy Ott. The Hemingway biography, you name it. And I loved big. The bigger the better, always in hardcover. And, you know, when you're young and impressionable, you read a biography, you think you're them. It's like I told you, like walking out of a movie theater on a Saturday night when you're a kid, where you are the actor, you're still in the movie, right? Well, you walk out of a book, you're part of that, the book's part of you. And at a certain point, you just have to lead your own life. You know, you'll find out that some of the biggest risk takers when they were young became some of the most conservative. Notice I didn't say scared. There's a big difference between scared and being conservative. And that's something that's not well understood. by the phony liberals in our society who think that they're the wild, crazy ones. They're the status quo. The liberals today are the status quo. They are the conformists. They're the ones involved in groupthink. They take no chances whatsoever, mentally or any other way, maybe the other way. I don't know that I can't generalize, but they take no chances mentally. They say the safe thing. They may as well live in Iran where the party approves, you know, what they say. And so I say to you at a certain point, you take some of the biggest risk takers. I was thinking of one who as a youth, it was Charles Lindbergh, who, as you know, flew the Spirit of St. Louis across the Atlantic. He was the first to fly a solo plane across the Atlantic. While reading his biography, as he got older, he became extremely cautious in most everything he did. Not frightened, but cautious. He came to realize what kind of risks are involved. Now, you can say, well, that could cripple you. I understand that. Well, that's your challenge to figure it out. So what I'm getting at is I'm getting at nothing. It's like raking sand. At this point in American politics, I feel as though I'm raking sand. On one hand, I'm indifferent. On the other hand, I see what's coming. And on the third hand, when there's no opposition party and the media is in the hands of a dictator, what you will have is a dictatorship. So that's why I'd rather talk about the world through a frying pan or a paella recipe or depression. You know, if you want to do politics, I'm capable of it, trust me. Now, I've not yet gotten to Dr. Ellis Washington's article on me, Prometheus in England. And he wrote, Prometheus caused blind hopes to live in the hearts of men. It's amazing that he compares the blacklisted radio man to mythological hero figure, but he did. I could read it to you, and I will maybe at another time. It's really well done. My favorite passage in here is, where was the favorite passage? He talks about the commissars, the conservative commissars. Here it is. That's the part I like. He says, likewise, Savage is indeed a titan, a man's man who, due to his fiery nature at times, hurls an ad hominem attacks at his conservative colleagues and enemies of veritas and liberty. However, I do not begrudge him, for why is it acceptable for progressives, liberals, and Democrats to relentlessly attack conservatives and conservative ideas, yet Rush, Hannity, O'Reilly, and the other conservative oligarchs don't seem too offended by these insults? On the contrary, these conservative commissars, he writes, constantly mention liberals by name, promote their books, and even frequently invite them on their programs while concurrently ignoring Dr. Savage. He says, I consider that rank hypocrisy. If they have an argument against Savage, then have the courage to appear in a show to debate him man-to-man in the arena of ideas. All right. Good luck. The day you'll get Hannity to debate anybody in an idea, huh? Let me hear about it. Okay, yes. Yes, he can debate you on the various claw hammers. I understand that. New York City, WOR. Hannah, welcome to the program.
Hi there. I just wanted to thank you for your discussion on depression on Friday. It changed my life. I have dealt with some depression at different times. And, you know, people have the usual kinds of things they say to try these meds, do this, do that. And the way you put it, the way you made it seem as though this is something that we go through in our lives throughout.
That's right. That you can't turn every downturn into a sickness. That's the medical establishment trying to medicalize every human emotion.
Yeah, and that was incredible for me, because over the weekend as well, I was thinking about the whole idea of people who are endless pleasure seekers. I live in Manhattan, and that's all around me. And I'm on the young side, so there's a lot of partying and this and that. And I had a whole new framework to everything, so I feel like it made a real difference in my life.
Yeah, in other words, you took a deep breath and you said, okay, let me think of it from another point of view.
I really
did. What I'm getting at is, I mean, there are people who are clinically depressed on to an edge that I don't think, by what I hear, you are. That's another story. But to tell everyone who has moods that go down that they're sick and they need to go to a shrink and get a medication is absurd.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let me ask you something. How did people live for eons without doctors and prescriptions? How did they live for so long? Well, you think they didn't have downturns in the Middle Ages during the Black Plague? They didn't all throw themselves off a bridge.
Your stories are so helpful, too.
How come they didn't throw themselves off a bridge during the Black Plague when the people were dying all around them? They didn't go to some crackpot shrink whose children are maniacs? 90% of the shrinks, you ever see their children, if they're married at all, what the children turn out? They're so smart.
Exactly. I wanted to say something, too, about paella. I am Puerto Rican, and we have something else in the bottom of our arroz con pollo. So this is called pigao. This is fantastic, and I think you should really try to make it.
What is it? On the bottom of the pan, it's also what? Caramelized, the rice?
Caramelized, exactly, except this is more from the chicken broth, and so there's, you know, some different kinds of...
I don't use water, by the way. When I'm making paella, I don't use water with the rice. I use... 3/4 chicken stock and 1/4 water for the liquid. Otherwise, it comes out too bland. But there's one big problem with most of these rice dishes. They're too oily. And therefore, you must avoid at all costs oversaturating the pan with oil when you start the chicken or the sausage or whatever you're putting in it.
Yeah, exactly. I also like to use these sofrito and recaíto. I don't know if that's something you have in the
West. I like the way you say recaíto, pecorito.
Yeah, it's delicious. You would love this. So
what's your problem, sweetheart? Why are you depressed?
I think I feel at odds sometimes with the whole, my contemporaries. I'm an artist. I'm an art teacher, and everyone around me. Oh, Obama. Oh, this.
Oh, so you're alienated from the robots, the lib robots, the
right,
geniuses who can't see reality when it hits them in the face.
Apartment in Manhattan. I never have used any kinds of, sort of like Puerto Rican angle to get anything that I have. And, so it's just kind of a disconcerting time to be a younger person in this society.
Yeah, I understand. But remember, this is interesting. A new Gallup poll came out. This is very important to you, to hear, and everyone else. Conservatives are the single largest ideological group in America. Now, wouldn't that strike you as odd in an age of Obama propaganda where you think 80% of Americans are communist progressives? Well, they're not. I linked it up from Gallup on my website. I'm suggesting that you realize you're actually in the majority, but you've been silenced by the media that distorts and twists everything, Anna, which is why people go crazy from this.
Right. Well,
all right, look, hang in there. Hang in there. Things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. No, I'm a total cynic again. I've been a cynic all my life, but okay, so expect the worst, and therefore, if it don't happen, you're lucky. Keep raking the sand. You know, think about what I said to you. The Zen masters would rake sand. They had sand gardens. You say, what are they? I learned this years ago. I couldn't understand it. What are those Japanese thinking, I thought. But when you think about it, it makes sense. Everything's orderly. You got a large, well, it could be small or large. It doesn't matter. They actually sell sand boxes with rakes for people who live in apartments. And the object is to delicately draw that rake across the sand and create a pattern. And what's the point? The point is that you have to learn how to focus your attention on what's immediately in your reality circle. Because that you can control. That you can make anything you want to out of it. I mean, what is an artist? Think about what an artist is. A person who is a really great artist is driven by many, many different forces within themselves. And they're not all healthy. Some of them are very destructive. In fact, one of the earliest artists I met as a child later turned out to be a murderer who was then gassed at the at Sing Sing. He was a very good artist. Very often, some very creative people are also quite criminal. Well, this has been written about. I mean, this is not unusual. I'm saying you have to be a criminal to be a great artist. But there have been many, many, many analyses of really good artists think like criminals, by the way. The difference is that the criminals actually only perform crime, whereas the artist inhibits the criminal impulse and puts it into his or her art. Now, what does it have to do with anything? I don't know. I'll let you figure it out. I'll be right back. I put up on michaelsavage.com of drunken students in England puking on themselves. I mean, at Cambridge University, they went out in a wild, they call it Suicide Sunday, puking, throwing up on themselves, stripping in the streets. There's no England anymore. You know, now they think about it, now that they banned me, thank God. Who wants to go to that cesspool? Now that I think about it, who wants to be in a nation that's so degenerate? I used to look up to this country. Look at these people. Young students helped after a binge. Imagine if they had to hold the Battle of Britain now against the ME-109. These guys couldn't even drive a Jeep over to the airfield, let alone fly the plane to defend their homeland. What homeland? What are you talking about? Everything ironic, like on MSNBC. Mock irony, as though they're so smart simply by doing mock irony on MSNBC. Everything is very sophomorically mock ironic with the sexually ambiguous ones on MSNBC. That passes for humor. Mock irony is to humor what a mock tutor is to a tutor or something. So I know what you're calling about pans and healing. I almost blew out an hour already. I haven't even warmed up. It's good. It's good. Conversation. Conversation with verse. You realize what talk radio really is? Conversation when it's good. In the true sense of conversation, to converse, share verse. We're sharing verse. Admittedly, it's mainly me giving you my verse. But talk radio should be converse with verse. So if you've got some verse that you'd like to share with me, you know the phone number, right? San Francisco, David, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, my grandfather had a full plate spread in the Contra Costa Time food section 2 years ago for his paella. It's delicious.
Was he a Spaniard?
No, he lived in Valencia. He did business all over the world, Caracas, Venezuela, and he lived in Valencia for a couple years. And the men didn't go in the kitchen, but he snuck in one night, likes food like you, and picked up the tips and techniques. And he's about the same age, just turned 70 in April. So he perfected it over the years, and it is delicious.
Isn't it interesting that the paella is a dish that you can keep perfecting? You have to keep perfecting it, by the way.
You should never have the same thing twice at his house because he never writes.
Never. You can't make. My mother was the same way. My father would complain, why can't the pot roast be the way it was last night? Well, she said it is. They'd have argument after argument over the pot roast. What he didn't understand is that cooking is an art, not a science.
That's true.
You're not producing. See, the reason people go into science is because they want some things that are absolutely proven to be known. For example, Linus Pauling once said the reason he went into chemistry is because it was the one science at the time, the one science where he can definitely know what he was looking at and what he was working with, meaning the elements, okay? Whether it be whatever the element may be, copper, lead, mercury, name the elements, it doesn't matter, name them all. Periodic table of the elements. So he went into chemistry because it was an area where you could know for sure what you were working with and what you were seeing. Cooking certainly isn't a science. In that sense, it's an art. So don't try to turn it into a science. A cookbook is only a roadmap. But how you get there is how you can drive, you can stop, you can start, etc. Let's move on. I don't want to get too trapped into... Let's play Obama lying to the doctors in clip one.
Healthcare reform must be and will be deficit neutral in the next decade. Now, there are already voices saying the numbers don't add up. They're wrong.
Right. Here's a man who's done nothing in his entire life to make a dime. He said himself a few months ago that he does nothing but push papers around. The man knows nothing about meeting a payroll. The man has never produced a profit. But he says that those who say that socialized medicine will bankrupt America even further, they don't know what they're talking about. They're wrong, and he's right. There it is. That's Obama to a T. Because he says it must be true. How far are we away from Ahmadinejad with this guy? This is crazy. It is insane. We're going to go. We are bankrupt. Okay, we know we're bankrupt. We know that. They're printing money. I think gold will go up. I know that I shouldn't talk about it because I have an advertiser who I love dearly. And I have Swiss America stuff. But truthfully, people are saying gold could become $2,000 an ounce. Why shouldn't it? Why shouldn't it? When you have a press that's so distorted that a guy like Schlepp Smith on so-called conservative Fox Network is lauded over the weekend by Frank Rich, a commie leftist of the lowest order, who says that Schlepp Smith is the one conservative he trusts. That's because Schlepp Smith is not a conservative. Schlepp Smith is Schlepp Smith. It's so bad on Fox News now that they have Judith Miller, a New York Times columnist, going on Schlepp Smith's show to talk about the Iranian election. And she actually says we don't really know what went on in Iran. She says the other side has a point, too. It's unbelievable to me. Astounding. That's why I say you can see the world through a frying pan. The problem is I have to follow the act last night from last night. I can't cook again tonight. What a mess. Oh, my God. A mess in the kitchen you can't believe. When I cook, look out. I had five accidents last night during the cooking. Don't think it was that smooth and easy. If I had a cooking show, you'd have to have a hazmat team next to me. People have said to me, do a cooking show for years, you know, and to talk your politics while making a... I could do that. I could do it. Get the camera on me while I'm cooking, you know, the world through an omelet, whatever. Someone will steal it. What do I care? They couldn't do it like I could do it. A schmuck will take it. Imagine it's like Schlepp Smith trying to do a cooking show. He can make a boiled egg, maybe. That's about it. But I had accident after accident. A glass dish dropped. I thought the dog would go blind. The topper was at the end. I decided I wanted to clean the pot myself. Wow, what a job that is, cleaning a paella pan with, you know, burnt rice on the bottom. After half a bottle of wine. So I turned, you know, I have one of these faucets in it that has a built-in filter, a Moen. Moen, they were like hot 10 years ago. I don't change too often. The other day I took the cartridge out. You change the cartridge when it says zero left. You know, you think that they're phony. They're not. The cartridge in this filter weighs like five times as much when it's used as when it's new. Why? Because all the particulate matter, mainly the heavy metals, that they claim are being trapped, in fact, are being trapped. Think about how happy your kidneys are for using a water filter like that in the house and your animals, man. Why don't they advertise? Call them up. Bill, call them up. Get them on the show. I like the sink top filter. So anyway, I have one of those things that comes out like on a long wire, you know? Like, you know the kind I'm talking about. So I'm cleaning the pan. I don't know what happened. The dog distracted me for a second. I looked down. He's always begging, looking up. The next thing I knew, a jet of water, hot water that I was using on the pan, the thing spun around. It shot a fountain up in the air. It hit me in the undershirt right in the stomach. And the dogs were running away barking. The floor was filled with water. I said, this is too much. I think tomorrow night it's Japanese takeout. Easy. Sushi, a rice, and that's it. Boom. Finished. Over. Farted.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
So Blue Monday on the Savage Nation.
On Blueberry Hill.
Lord Byron's poem Prometheus characterizes the Titan as rebellious. For the Romantics, Prometheus was an irresistible paradigm of the man, alone in the arena who refuses to be corrupted by any form of institutional tyranny as personified by Zeus, church, monarch, and patriarch. Romantics, like Shelley, Byron, and others, compared Prometheus with the spirit of the French Revolution, Christ, Milton, Satan, and the creative inspiration of poets and artists. Likewise, he writes, Savage is indeed a titan, a man's man who, due to his fiery nature at times, hurls ad hominem attacks at his conservative colleagues and enemies of veritas and liberty. And then he calls them whatever. You should read this article. It's really one of the best ever written about me by Dr. Ellis Washington. Prometheus, Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England. I'm not going to read the whole thing to you because I think that maybe 1% of you would like to hear it. The rest of you can read it if you want on michaelsavage.com. But I'm so impressed by this article, not solely because it lauds me, which it does, but because of the level of the writing of Dr. Ellis Washington, that I'm going to ask him if he'd like to write my biography. And someone has to write it. I'm not going to write it. That would be an autobiography, which I wrote Psychological Nudity, which you can buy for Father's Day on michaelsavage.com. I, you know, buy it, enjoy it, whatever. It's nice. It's a family book. There's not a dirty word in it. I don't promise you the world, you know. I just tell you some stories. It's a beautiful article. It really made my day. Maybe that's why I feel good. Maybe I'm that simple. Maybe somewhere in the darkness of being a singular voice, I see that there's a like-minded individual out there who you know, who respects me and I respect him. And the interesting thing is I sent Dr. Washington a letter when I saw this article, and I said, although we haven't met, you are a true brother. That's amazing, you know. All right, that's all. Let's let it go at that. Mental brother. And he said, well, I'm not going to read what he said. You should read it. So we were talking about the world through a frying pan in the first hour. Did I get to the coprolites yet? Did I tell the people about my next brilliant insight on the Savage Nation? I knew a scientist years ago who studied coprolites. Now, coprolites are the dried droppings of deceased animals and humans. And he went to Chiapas, and he went into caves or underneath, you know, monuments, and he found coprolites, and he was very excited about it. I thought it was disgusting, frankly, you know, rooting around an ancient turd, basically. But all right, it's a whole science today. Everything's a science. In the world we live in today, I'm surprised more people don't study coprolites with the Obama grants. But anyway, a scientist who studies the dry droppings of deceased animals, and I mean hundreds, thousands of years old, they think that they can reconstruct the entire animal or the entire human, when in fact they're really only reconstructing a portion. The desiccated seeds and such that they find inside the fossilized dung does not tell them what the whole animal is. It tells them what the animal may have eaten that particular day or week. And I think that there's a metaphor. It's the same with America's media today. They look for the droppings of their political opponents and say, aha, gotcha, here's who you are. And just as the coprolites found of a deceased animal may give the scientist a small snapshot of some of the foods that this animal may have eaten, it certainly does not give him a full picture of the animal in its entirety. But the American media today gives us snapshots of the droppings of their political enemies. They certainly don't give you a full picture of the person or of the topic, do they? They purport to be investigating something, but journalism really has now devolved to the level of scraping in the dust for coprolites, in my opinion. Don't comment on it because it's a complete comment. You can't. How can you comment on a complete comment? I made another comment in the last hour that I'd like to comment upon during this commentary phase of this commentary show, which is, and here's the comment that I made in the last hour that is worthy of additional commentary on this show of commentary. And that is, if you turn on a snotty loser show, like a channel like MSNBC, which is now filled with collegey, sophomoric, false irony, every statement out of the mouth, particularly of that creature Pat, the creature that looks like Pat, remember Pat, the movie Pat? Every statement out of her mouth is like a college roommate, false irony. And that's sophomoric humor. Irony is the lowest form of humor, particularly when it's not ironic. When you're just using inflection to project what's supposedly ironic when it isn't, is not even humorous. It's sophomoric attempts at humor. That's what MSNBC passes for now. Everything's a snide but not funny statement. That's because the mentality of the left-wing media today is virtually all sophomoric. I'm proud to tell you that I'm not in that category. And I'm also happy to read today that the latest Gallup poll shows that conservatives are the single largest ideological group. Now, how do you explain that if conservatives are the single largest ideological group, according to the not conservative Gallup poll, that we have a radical, left-wing, I would say neo-Marxist regime running America? And that is because we have neo-Marxists in the media. You hear? That's all. Thus far in 2009, 40% of Americans interviewed in national Gallup poll surveys described their political views as conservatives. 35% as moderate and 21% as liberal. So there it is. It says the 21% calling themselves liberal is in line with findings throughout this decade, but is up from the 1990s. These annual figures are based on multiple national Gallup surveys, blah, 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 as though it's scientific. All right, it's something to talk about. We don't know how valuable, you know. Conservatives are a very large number of people, but we have no representation. We have taxation, but no representation. That's called taxation without representation. I seem to think I remember a historic event tied in with taxation without representation. How about representation without representation? That's more or less what we have today. Representation without representation. Article comes out today that Turban Durbin, the man who called our troops Nazis and fascists, spoke to the Treasury Secretary and then spoke to the Federal Reserve Chairman last October and then cashed in all his stock before the stocks tanked. Now, why Turban Durbin is not in a pair of FBI handcuffs today is simply a matter of the fact that his Chicago machine is running America. In another time, that's it. He's in a pair of handcuffs. Diamond Jim Brady and him have a lot in common. I knew there was something wrong. I knew the way Turban Durbin always talks so quietly and sedately, Mr. Nice Guy, but he called our troops Nazis, him and that other lying fat slob, Murtha. Why is Murtha not in a pair of handcuffs? Why? Because they own the investigative agencies. In other words, we're living in a banana republic. I'll be right back.
Found my thrill on Blueberry Hill.
Dance to this in the basements of Queens. Wow.
On Blueberry Hill.
Talk about dancing. There's a way to get away from geometry. Those Saturday night parties, they were pretty good. Parents were away. Liquor cabinet was raided. Fats was on a machine. That's what kids are supposed to do, the birds and the bees. I'm just having fun. You don't care about Senator Durbin cashing out during a big stock collapse. Why should you care? After you live in Iran now. The Iran of Obama. As U.S. stock markets plummeted last September, the Senate's number two Democrat, Dick Durbin, sold more than $115,000 worth of stocks and mutual fund shares and used much of the money to invest in Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, Inc. He spoke to Treasury Secretary Hank Paulson, who hasn't been seen since, and Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. Same day he bought shares in Berkshire Hathaway. Go read the story. I didn't write it. It was written by Bloomberg News. Now, call them Nazis now. Go ahead. Anyone who finds out what a liberal's doing is a Nazi by definition. That's all. Los Angeles, Larry, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Yes. Hi, Michael. I recently spoke with Fats Domino's manager, and I told him about how you play a lot of Fats Domino songs. And I asked him if Fats listens to your show. He told me he's a very big fan. He rarely leaves New Orleans. And his manager
Confirm or deny it. I would hope he's listening to the show. I mean, I love this music, and I play it on Mondays because it's a perfect start to Blue Monday, you know.
Right. I have a message from the manager. You know, Fats' number one hit was The Fat Man, his first song.
You're kidding.
But you never
we have that. That. We'll look for that one. Any other message from Fats Domino's manager in L.A.?
No, but I have a message.
Hey, what? You're in L.A., so you know everything, Larry. This David Carradine story. Why is the L.A. Times brushing aside the wig and the fishnet stocking allegations?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
I will tell you why. It doesn't fit the profile of many of the deviant actors in Hollywood.
So in other words, when they actually are seen as the deviants they are, they have to cover that up and turn them into Boy Scouts, even though they hate Boy Scouts?
Well, not give the name of the producer.
They should glorify the fact that the guy was wearing a wig and fishnets if that's what really happened. He's 72. He's entitled to auto-asphyxiate, isn't he? Don't the liberals believe in euthanasia?
Yes.
So the guy, he had a little mistake, that's all.
Far. There is a producer in Hollywood. I will not say his name, but he's very, very well known. He's produced many, many movies. Wrote a best-selling book, and he was one of the most perverted people in the history of the world.
Everybody I'm shocked. I'm stunned. Wild sex in Hollywood? It can't be, Larry.
It wasn't just wild sex, Michael.
Larry, they're all secret Christians in their basements. They actually have churches.
Right. One more message, Michael. Jackie Mason loved when you played his little bit on Nancy Pelosi.
How do you know that?
He's a very, very good friend of mine.
Yeah, well, how come he doesn't call the show? He doesn't call, he doesn't write.
You know what happened in Vegas with the free ticket and all that? Remember?
A free ticket? I didn't want a free ticket. I asked him to get me tickets and I'd pay for them. But his wife went nuts and thought I was asking for a free ticket. I don't like anything for free.
Oh, well, then I'll tell him.
I don't understand, too. The show sold out. I have someone who wants to go to the show. Can you get me 2 tickets? I'll buy him. She already turned it into he wanted a free ticket. Who needs a free ticket to Jackie Mason?
That was his wife who turned it. I know his wife very well.
I don't know. They all go nuts after a certain age.
Care of this.
I don't care. Anyway, I like his humor. That's all that matters. I don't know anything about his wife. I don't know who that is. I didn't even know he was married. See, you try to do someone a favor and it turns into something else. I said raking sand today, right? Raking sand, the Zen Buddhist raked sand, remember? Now, tomorrow I'll read Media Matters can report that Michael Savage says rape people named Sandy. I mean, that's what I'm talking about with coprolites. That's who they are. This Stalinist group funded by George Soros, created by Hillary Clinton, called Media Matters, distorts everything that I say, and by the way, other conservatives, and passes that off as truth in order to defame us and destroy us. That's the kind of country you wanted to live in? A Stalinist country like this that has devolved to produce this fraud from Chicago? I'm getting angry, and I shouldn't. I don't want to get angry. I'm not going to get angry. I refuse to get angry. Yesterday, I was on the dock of my boat washing it. So a neighbor said to me he's having his boat painted. So we talked about painting. I said, you're not going to the equivalent of Earl Scheib, are you? We had a laugh over that. He said, I didn't think he would know who he is. Because when I was a kid, there was a auto. Is he still in business? I hope not. I don't want to, you know, get a lawsuit here. I got to check if he's in business. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But when we were kids, there was a $29.99 paint shop. If you bought a used car, you immediately went to Earl Scheib. Came out shiny. The problem was there was paint on the chrome, on the windows, on the mirrors, wherever. And you had to, like, get the lacquer thinner to get it off the windows. But you thought you had it. You faked it like you were poor that you had a newer car. No one thought it was new, like a Cadillac. You had a Cadillac, a Buick Roadmaster. No. But it was cleaner. It was shinier and newer. With paint on the windshield and the bumpers. I said, you know, the boat paint is not like an Earl Scheib. No, guys paint boats, man. I don't like to get, like, paint on the propeller. Paint on the propeller. What a business. The boat business is dead. Whoa, wow. Dealer went bankrupt up in Seattle. Big dealer. Shot. Boom. What did they do after? Like a year ago, sales, $2 million, $3 million, $1 million, $9 million. Earl Scheib is still in business, though. Scheib is dead. God rest his soul. Hey, play The Fat Man by Fats Domino. I don't know if I heard this one.
They call me the Fat Man. Cause I went to 100 pounds.
See, he comes out of the real blues music. You're supposed to like, if you understand music. To me, it's like food. Do you like it or you don't like it? I like it. I don't know what it is. I know an artist when I hear one. An artist. Jackie Mason's an artist. Fats Domino is an artist. Sean Penn is a BS artist, for example. A real genius of philosophy. San Francisco, Jim, KNEW, what's on your mind?
Hi, Michael.
Yes, sir.
Yes, one thing you forgot about over the years, I've been listening to you for a while, was the pot pie.
Pot pie?
The pot pie, yes.
Pot pie. How to make a pot pie? Very simple. Take a frozen pot pie and put a picture of Sean Penn on the top of it. Bake for 3 minutes in a microwave and you have a pot pie.
Yeah, I know, but for many years, I mean, even 100 years, since I was a kid, I'm not 100 years old, but the pot pie you like, right?
When did I ever talk about pot pie?
You didn't. That's why I'm calling.
Oh, my mother once bought it. She got tired of cooking, so she went out and bought Morton's frozen pot pies when we were kids. We gave it a thumbs down. She never dared do it again. It was reported to father. He came home and he said he was told by the children that mom bought a frozen dinner and gave it to us. That was it. He gave her a pair of eyes. The next thing, it was back to the pots and the pans and the slavery. Never did I ever get another. Then she got older, that she got tired of it all. She once tried a frozen dinner on us. Oh, that really went over well. If Dad came home green from a day's work, the Queensboro Bridge in the snow, and heard about a frozen dinner, gave her the eyes. That was the end of the frozen dinner.
Savage.
He's run it so that he's always in control. He's the one who makes all the decisions about national security issues. He makes all the decisions about anything that really goes to the heart of the regime and its power base.
Now, that is Fox News, Judith Miller talking with Schlepp Smith, not about Obama, although it could be, but about the supreme leader of Iran. I thought they were talking about Obama. I couldn't believe it. It sounded like Obama. What's the difference there? Unbelievable to me. This is unbelievable. The supreme leader. Obama's the supreme leader. Houston, Texas. Ben, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael, I'm from Texas, but and this is off topic, I know. I love to hear you wax poetic about other topics than politics, including your boating on San Francisco Bay. And mm-hmm. I got to tell you, you guys are tough. I was out there this past weekend, and for the first time in the hills above Sausalito, there's an old abandoned fort, and you can go up.
Oh, it's gorgeous, yes.
And I looked, and I was bundled up. I was couldn't get out of the car hardly, and I looked at the boats, and I thought, well, Michael may be down there, but how do you guys survive, boating down there? Isn't it so cold? I've never touched.
I happen to love the cold. I mean, I'm not really a hot weather guy. First of all, I'm not a sailor, so don't confuse me with the real get wet kind of guys, on the side of the boat. There's guys who are out there with the raincoats. I have a 42-foot power boat that has a flybridge, yes, that can get spray on it, which I prefer to sail from there, boat from there. And it has an interior cabin, but I don't like boating from inside. I may as well stay home or be in a Chrysler as much as boat from inside a boat. I like the cold. I like the spray. You just dress for it.
Yeah, okay. That's what I thought.
You get a salt spray on your face on a cool day. It wakes you up,
Sure.
Doesn't matter. It's just beautiful. It's beautiful. We're reminded of, pictures of the U.S. Navy in World War II when they got caught in a typhoon with an aircraft carrier jumping up and down with a boat as heavy as that. The bow is being, dunked going into a wave. And then you add to that pilots having to take off in a hurricane, and I don't know if they did or not. I know they did night missions on those aircraft carriers when radar was primitive. How in the world did those 18- and 19-year-old guys win World War II? Now, compare them to the guys today. You got to ask yourself. You may as well just turn it over to China right now. They could live on a handful of rice. They got 1 million, 2 million, 20 million extra boys in China because of the one-child policy. They knew what they were doing. They knew just what they were doing. They were breeding a generation of men. And you know what happens if you study the history of any nation that has too many men? They go to war. It's eerie. When you look at what's going on, that they have taken us over without firing a shot, you realize they're following a playbook written a long time ago by a brilliant strategist. And I'm not talking about George Bush. So it's a very it's really ominous. The prognosis is such that's why I'd rather talk about the world through a frying pan than talk about politics. You had 18- and 19-year-olds who enlisted to save America, World War II, or were drafted. You have to remember that every pilot, every naval aviator was a volunteer, and not all of them made the cut. They all basically went out on suicide mission. You say suicide. Every mission was a suicide mission in World War II. Don't fool yourself. You think they didn't know that they're willing to sacrifice themselves for their country, as are many of our 18- and 19-year-olds who are fighting valiantly in Afghanistan, despite what the vermin lice, the supine lice, say about them. But what about the rest of us? Where is it going to come from? When you see boys, white boys, running around with pimples on their face, without belts on their pants, trying to look like jail sissies with the pants falling down, you say, I don't think so. Put them in the army? I'm suing. I'm suing. You scared me. You said a bad word. You called me a name. You made me crawl in mud. Ugh, yuck. I got a cold. Can I call home? Can I get my lawyer? How does this work? How does a nation survive that's so beaten to death like this? 30 years of feminism. 30 years of feminism. A nanny state. How does it survive? How does it come back from this? That's why I'd rather talk about paella, frying pans, and Earl Scheib than any politics. You know what I'm saying? Bill in Massachusetts, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Hello, Michael. I'm just calling to say that I'm a liberal from Massachusetts who normally disagrees with everything you say and how you say it. but I do find it very interesting to tune in on, to you when I'm riding in the car alone at night. It certainly keeps me alert, and I never fall asleep listening to you. I just wanted you to know.
Why don't you just get a radio that plays sound, just plain sound, since I have no content. I realize to liberals, I have no content. I'm merely sound.
Oh, I think your content. I wanted to say one thing to you that it might surprise you somewhat. I am a liberal who does oppose, sincerely now, I oppose Great Britain banning you from their shores on grounds of freedom of speech.
Well, then you actually are a true liberal as opposed to a progressive communist socialist from hell.
Well, thank you for
the- I made you laugh in the dark night. Where are you heading right now? Which are you home or in a car?
In the car, but I tried to call you once before, and I kept the number, and I'm just sitting
good.
Here.
Good. What station are you listening to the Savage Nation on, RKO? But don't even say it if it isn't. I don't. So I don't want to argue with you. You know, if you enjoy listening to me, maybe I'll, you know, change your mind on certain things. Maybe I won't. You know, I have no desire here to change anything anymore. That's why I'm moving the show's content to the world through a frying pan. You know what I mean, Bill?
I wanted to mention that I will oppose any attempt by perhaps other liberals to impose the fairness doctrine. Again, I believe in freedom of speech. And though I disagree again with everything, virtually everything you say, I would defend the right to say it.
How could you disagree with everything I say? You mean when I talked about how to cook paella, you disagree with that too?
I'm sorry, repeat that, please.
I gave a recipe on how to cook a Spanish dish paella. You disagreed with my recipe as well?
No.
Well, no, I'm testing your wiring here. I got to see if you have a sense of humor. It's my first test. Because if a person has no sense of humor, they're Bill Ayers. You know who Bill Ayers is, don't you?
Oh, yes, I certainly do.
Yeah, Bill Ayers and Barack Hussein Obama were actually on a foundation together, the Annenberg Foundation. And Bill Ayers and his colleagues are quoted as saying that when the revolution comes, it would be foreseeable that 30 million Americans should be killed in order to bring about a perfect socialism. So I guess you disagree with my view of that as well.
Yes, yes, I do, in the context you're taking it. I just want to leave my message with two things that I do support.
You left it already. I got a migraine from the conversation, that's all. What do I know? Earl Scheib, cars, boats. Let's see, I'm having my boat waxed. Does anyone know about wax? I'm having the varnish done. Does anyone know about varnish? Because the varnish wears off every 6 months. The guy comes back, you know, amigo this, amigo that, and it costs you a fortune to redo the varnish. So I found out from a neighbor that there's a varnish they sell with UV protection. It lasts a year. Then there's another product made in Fort Lauderdale that they say lasts 3 years. So, you know, there's all the new developments in this business. Of course, you could buy a boat without any wood on it. Then you eliminate the whole the varnish job. It's like, you know, you don't have to varnish anything. But I mean, a boat should have wood on it. It should have a little rails, mahogany rails. It looks like mahogany. They're teak rails, but when they're varnished, I love them. My favorite thing is to be out on the boat in a slight sea where the boat's rising, you know, moving, and you're looking down on teak decks that have water on them. There's something so... People say, what do you like about boating? I'll tell you exactly what I like about boating. I forget everything except boating. I don't like to go out with anyone because I don't want to talk when I'm on a boat. A lot of people boat, they think they're supposed to entertain, get drunk. First of all, you can't drink when you boat or you'll kill somebody. It's a very good rule not to drink when you're boating. Get a captain and then get drunk. Don't drive a boat and drink. It's a very bad idea. You know, it's much more dangerous than you may think. I sincerely mean that. But if I'm out on the boat alone, not even with the dog, because he doesn't like the boating as much as he did when he was a baby. Now he understands the danger involved. He once got in a little minor storm, and he lost his bearings, and he started to quiver like a person with Parkinson's. It was sad to behold. I had to hold him and say, it's okay. He was shaking like a homeless dog that you'd find in the middle of the winter in Central Park and taken out of kindness of your heart into the car and put near the heater as my father did and bring him home. It was amazing. Remember, he did that once. He found a dog shivering out in the snow. I even gave them away eventually for someone. They didn't gas them in those days. Today, everything they gas. They gas. Everything is gassed. But anyway, when you go out there, your mind is only on the water and the water and the birds, if you like nature, and the seals and whatever. That's it. Your mind is completely focused. I mean, there's a reason that people get involved in various activities. And it's a rather minor activity in terms of what people do to get away from the stresses of life. You know, I mean, people will climb mountains, for God's sakes, rock climbing. What do you think they're doing that for? Sheer exhilaration, yes. Testing themselves, yes. But they're doing it because they're, in a way, I think they're troubled, mentally troubled as well. You got to understand, people are driven to do these things because they're fighting certain things. And they're demon. Everything's a demon today. Everything's demon, the dark side. I mean, what was the dark side in demons? Everyone, oh, what's that? Oh, that's my dark side. Those are my demons. No, it's you. It's called your fears and your worries. That dark side. Everything I got to turn into something that it isn't. From the beginning of time, human beings had worries, fears, concerns, anxieties, hopes, and dreams. Now it's all been turned into a medical situation. They're all dark side, dark night, dark side, demons, not dark sides. Some people are pure evil. They're born evil, they commit evil, and they die evil. There's no rehabilitation. And they commit a heinous crime, they should be killed, gassed, executed, electrocuted. I hate that show on MSNBC, Dark Night, Mean Mind, and they show a guy talking to you like a normal man. Oh, yes, well, I meant to go in the family farm, but when the farm was sold, I decided to kill a girl. That was the first time, yes, that I would not kill the women I dated, but I would kill strangers. And one day, I saw this on Sunday. The guy's talking to you like he's normal. I say, why is he breathing? Why is this man not gassed and dead? Yes, the second time I was coming home and I didn't feel good, and I saw a young lady with a stroller, and I pulled over and I said to her, if you don't let me rape you, I will kill your baby. And so I raped her and then I killed her. Like, talking to you, MSNBC's running this stuff. And I say, why is the man not dead? Answer, liberalism is a mental disorder. You disagree with that? You're a sicko. I'll be back. Savage. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England by Ellis Washington. From World End Daily. Great article. Yeah, it's about me, glorifies me, but it's well written. And I really appreciate it. I think you will too. The Tehran-Iran thing is very bad. I mean, did you expect anything different? You expected the Hitler of Iran to step down because they voted him out? You must be joking. You know, yeah, you expected something different. You talk about crazy. Remember the dirty bomber, Jose Padilla? A judge, so-called, has ruled that he can sue a former government lawyer who wrote memos that allegedly led to his so-called torture. So when you have enemies within in black robes like we do in this country, anything can happen, anything will happen, and anything is happening. That's all. We're living in a very dangerous time. 7 foreign hostages murdered in Yemen. Gun law challenges federal powers. I'm reading some of the headlines. Take me off the blacklist, Savage tells Brown. It's not a dead story, but he hasn't done it yet. Let's see what else we have for you here. Turban Durban used insider info to cash out of tanking stock market. Big story. You won't read about it tomorrow. Instead, they'll cover some nonsense. Obamacare to destroy alternative medicine. Goodbye acupuncture, herbs, and vitamins by Peter Barry Chalka. Read it. It's an important story. You're not going to read it anywhere else because no one understands what's going on. Here's the funniest one. Argentine glacier advances despite global warming. You ever talk about insanity? It's this. A glacier is actually growing, quote, despite global warming. Now, you talk about brainwashed people in the Associated Press. In other words, they have to say there's global warming. So despite the fact that their eyes show that the glacier is actually growing, they have to say the glacier is advancing despite global warming. Now, you talk about the end of times for the American media. There's no greater story that exemplifies it, in my opinion, than that. I've never seen anything like this insanity. How in the world could they not see how blind they have become? Glacier growing despite global warming, they say. You know, you read the comments at the end of the articles. They're funnier than the article themselves. One guy writes, we better pay Gore to fly down there and tell this wayward block of ice to keep up with the politically correct attitude and melt, or we're going to send some nukes and melt it ourselves. Here's another one that says, Argentine glacier advances despite global warming. Sadly, this is not the most asinine headline on global warming I've ever read. How about this one? A car keeps running despite being out of gas. Rocket keeps heading toward orbit despite running out of fuel. Plant kept on growing despite being unwatered. People are not that stupid, Mr. Obama. Not everyone is an illegal immigrant from Chicago. Trust me. Al in New York. I'm going to run out of time here. Al on WOR, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I just want to make a comment that a lot of these guys who were in the Second World War were indoctrinated by, you know, patriotism. These people today don't talk about patriotism. They don't know what what a slogan is for being a good American.
I agree 1,000%. In other words, the boys who became the soldiers in World War II, it was a given that you had a nation, you were proud of the nation, and you'd be willing to fight for the nation.
Well,
today they're being raised, these children have been raised by radical leftists and feminists who have taught them there is no America, there's just open borders. There is no such thing as patriotism. The only people who are patriotic are right-wing, dangerous ideologues, such as the man who killed last week. And worse yet, that anyone who fights for their country is a fool.
Kill anybody because of a helicopter.
So therefore, Al, we may as well just turn the White House over to Red China, because they've won the war. They have millions of extra men, and it's a very, very poor prognosis. We have, half our politicians are doing deals behind our back to make money with the Red Chinese government. And it goes back as far as I can remember. Now, I'm going to bring up a name. Here's the advanced placement test on the Savage Nation. Here's the APT test question of the day on the Savage Nation. Hemorrhoid, pay attention. You can steal this for tomorrow's show. Get out the blackboard. Here it is. What was the name of the man who owned a parking meter company in the Bronx, who then turned it into a space corporation, who then used U.S. space technology to launch rockets for China, who was the biggest contributor to the Clinton Democrat National Committee? And where is he today? Anyone who can answer that wins a free copy of Mao Zedong's Little Red Book. 1-800-449-8255. There is a blue uniform in your future. That's if you're not turned into cannon fodder, per se. That's what I never saw anything like that. That's why I told you I started the show today talking about the world through a frying pan and the study of coprolites. They're not directly related, by the way, although I will tell you that the caramelized rice does resemble the latter, even though they shouldn't. And I've not given you my new secret on paella. I don't think I'm going to give it. Certain things I should keep to myself. I'll save it for my cooking show, which I don't have yet. Should I do a cooking show? Yay, do a cooking show. I think I should do a cooking show on my website, like 1 hour a week, where I get in my kitchen, cameras running, and I cook and talk politics while tasting food and drinking a beer. I think it'll be a great show. Yeah, others can do it. They will never do it my way. There are some wonderful cooking shows out there. Some of them are too, like, histrionic. There's a guy I like on the weekend. I'll sometimes sit and watch a few cooking shows. There used to be a French guy who did cooking shows. He got too old already from too much butter. And why is every dish butter, salt, and sugar? I don't understand these people. Nobody cooks that way anymore. They all know better. That's like doing a show on barbecue without knowing that the benzoapyrenes on barbecued food cause cancer. We've known this since the 1960s that barbecued food is poisonous. You can eat it once in a while, but if you eat it every night, you're going to die of gastric cancer, a horrible death. And yet there are people every night, I got neighbors like this. You don't know what they're thinking. Where are their brains? Some of the cooking shows. And I put in the butter and the salt. There's a woman, Italian, Lydia's Kitchen. I used to like her. I stopped watching. I can't take every dish. She puts in literally 4 or 5 grams of salt in every dish. How does she? People don't know this is not good for you. You never heard of high blood pressure and salt? Oh, take medication. Go to Dr. Schmendrick. He'll give you medication for your high blood pressure. And then tell you don't worry about what you eat. Food has nothing to do with health. Then put sugar in everything. Why do you have diabetes? I don't know, but here's medication for your diabetes. How about a lifestyle change? No, siree, Bob. Take a medicine.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back. Last night I cooked paella, the Spanish dish, and I used a pan I've had for at least 30 years. A very large stainless steel skillet with a glass top so I could watch the cooking. Today I went into one of those fancy cooking stores that has all these items that you think you need but you never use. My mother cooked on a four-burner electric stove, remember, and she turned out 3 gourmet meals a day, 6 times a week if she needed to, on a four-burner electric stovetop with a few aluminum pans. Nevertheless, I went into this fancy cooking store, and I was thinking of cheating on my 30-year-old skillet. I was looking at new varieties of the same pan. Some were deeper, some were shinier, some had elaborate scroll work on them. The more I thought about it, the more I rejected each new item. I said, what's wrong with the pan I've got? It's worked for 30 years. I think I'll just keep it. An elderly lady who worked at the store and I had a chat about frying pans. She showed me the latest variety of skillet. She said, yes, but that has a nonstick service, I said. I said, wait a minute. I just looked at a stainless steel one. She said, yes, but this one is a nonstick surface, and this is a non-toxic nonstick surface. It doesn't emit any particles. I said, well, my body has gotten used to these particles of nonstick material over the years, and I don't think my body would do very well without an occasional particle of nonstick surfactant in my cells. We had a big laugh over that. I said, you and I grew up in the same generation. Apparently today they're afraid of everything. There are so many filters, filtered air, filtered water, filtered conversation, filtered television, filtered computers, filtered words, filtered ball fields, filtered thoughts. When a child is exposed today to a single bad word, they fall apart and wonder why mommy isn't there to protect them. Where's the police state of mommy? We had a big laugh over that as well. Then I told her a story of one time when I was a child and my father took me by the hand through the meanest streets of New York's Lower East Side where he had a store during the polio epidemic. And he said to me, don't worry about it. By exposing you to all of these germs, you're not going to get polio. It builds up immunity. Of course, I didn't know what immunity was, but I didn't get polio. Thank God. But the fact of the matter is, recent studies have shown that children who grow up in houses that have the least amount of dust and particulate matter are generally the sickliest. That is right. And that is precisely because, as my father taught me as a kid, children who are not exposed to various microbes and various microbes often do not develop the capacity to resist them when they are. So here we are coming full circle. Which frying pan should I buy? The lady and I went over to the ironware section and she said, aha, now that's the stuff that the West was built on. I said, remember the days when it was said we needed to iron cookware in order to get a bit of iron in our food? She said, yes, that's where true grit came from. The men had steel in their bodies. We had a laugh over that as well. I said to her, you can see the world through a frying pan. She said, is that your next book? And I said, do you know who I am? She said, no, and I replied, I'm a famous author and broadcaster. When she said, I'll have to look for that title, I said, well, I think you'll be quite a while waiting for it, as I walked out of the fancy frying pan store, deciding to stay with my 30-year-old skillet. One of the largest stories right now in Israel is about a picture that came out a while ago that showed Obama sitting at a desk with his feet up while supposedly talking to Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu. Joining us now from Israel is Aaron Klein.
Hi, Michael. I'm here in Jerusalem, where one of the top stories in the media is actually this picture that's floating around of the President of the United States, Barack Obama, in the Oval Office, where he was on the telephone with the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Obama had his feet on his desk with the sole of his shoes facing the camera. And in Islam, which, of course, there are a lot of Muslims in the Middle East, in Islam, the sole of the shoe is the largest insult to a Muslim. So here on the Savage Nation, we called several people in the Middle East, Muslims, and actually some terrorist leaders, and they viewed this picture of Obama as the President of the United States sending a message of humiliation aimed at Israel. For example, I called Abu Mujahid, who's also known as Muhammad Abdul El. He's the spokesperson and senior leader of the Popular Resistance Committees, a terrorist organization in Gaza. And he told me, quote, this is worse than a slap in the face. It's a sign of humiliation that shows Obama thinks the Israeli government and the Jews don't deserve more than shoes. He also said, and again, he's commenting on this photo of Obama with his shoes facing the camera while he was on the phone with the prime minister. This terrorist continued, quote, "This proves Obama is disgusted with the Israelis. He understands how U.S. support to Israel brought all this hatred toward the United States in the world. With Obama's shoes, change can come." I also called Abu Ahmed, who's a senior leader of Hamas's so-called military wing in the Gaza Strip. He commented, quote, "Just as a journalist humiliated President Bush with his shoes, this is how Obama is humiliating the Israeli government." Now, in Judaism, the sole of the shoe isn't a particular insult, but actually, in the Israeli media, they are paying very close attention to this picture, and they've taken it as an insult. Even Haaretz, which is a leftist newspaper, interpreted this picture as an insult to Israel. Also, Channel 2, Channel 10, which are the equivalent here of ABC and NBC, as well broadcast footage of this photo. And by the way, apparently there's more than one photo. There are several. And also painted this as some sort of insult to Israel. Now, it could certainly be that you have this president who has been taking more of a casual theme to the White House, unlike President Bush, who would not be photographed in the Oval Office without his suit on. Obama constantly takes his suit jacket off. So this could just be part of a more relaxed image, and Obama didn't realize that this photo would be broadcast around the world. But obviously now you have these reports of a major clash in politics and in policies between the White House on the one hand and Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on the other. Obviously, people here are sensitive, and to float this picture around the world, Israel views as a very insensitive thing to the Jewish state. And I can tell you, the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, will be giving a major address responding to Obama's address to the Muslim world last week, where he had a lot of things to say about Israel. For example, that the West Bank and Jewish communities in the West Bank are one of the main impediments to peace in the Middle East, even though actually Israel offered to give the Palestinians the West Bank on several occasions, and they rejected it and instead launched terrorist wars against Israel, even though several times in the past, in 1948 and 1967, Arabs ganged up on Israel to destroy the Jewish state long before Israel ever retained the West Bank. So Bibi Netanyahu, Prime Minister, is going to be responding to this and several other U.S. policies, such as the U.S. policy toward Iran, in a major address. I'm sure that's going to be a point of focus. For now, though, this is Aaron Klein with another exclusive update from Jerusalem for the Savage Nation.
Thanks for the update, Aaron. The study of coprolites is conducted by scientists who study the dried droppings of deceased animals and humans. That's right, the leftover doo-doo, sometimes hundreds or thousands of years old. And in studying the coprolites, these scientists believe they can reconstruct the whole animal or the whole human, when in fact all they're reconstructing are the desiccated seeds and such that remain in the fossilized dung. Certainly this does not reflect on the whole animal. Well, it's the same with America's media today. They look for the droppings of their political opponents and say, aha, gotcha, here's who you are. Just as the coprolites found of a deceased animal in a ruin in Chiapas may give the scientist a small snapshot of some of the foods that this animal may have eaten, it certainly does not give us a picture of the whole animal. The American media today gives us snapshots of the droppings of public figures. They did not give us a whole picture of the topic or the person they purport to be investigating. Journalism has now devolved to the level of scraping in the dust for coprolites. I'm Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
North Korea, Iran, and Israel are problems that only seem to be getting bigger. Joining us now is KT McFarland from KTMcFarland.com to talk about these stories and how they're tied together.
Hi, Michael. The world is now at a crossroads, and the Iranian elections make it pretty clear that Iran is heading in a direction of increased confrontation with the West. Regardless of who is declared the final victor of this election, and I do think it will be Ahmadinejad and not Mousavi, it doesn't really make a big difference, because while one, Mousavi had advocated better relations with the United States than Ahmadinejad had, neither of those two candidates were advocating stopping Iran's nuclear program, having a different relationship with Israel. And frankly, that's the most important thing right now. Will the United States stand by and watch Iran go nuclear? Israel lives in a really tough neighborhood. It's surrounded by those hostile Muslim nations, terrorist groups. It's fought defensive wars every decade of its 60-year modern existence. And every time a country attacks Israel, Israel beats it back. You've got to really admire them. Every time a suicide bomber blows up a shopping mall, the Israelis rebuild it the next day. But the next year or two could present Israel with its biggest challenge ever, and that's nuclear weapons. If President Obama's speech in Cairo is indicative of a new American attitude towards Israel, Israel may be facing the nuclear threat, frankly, alone.
Unbelievable.
Most experts agree that no matter who becomes president of Iran, that is, if the Iranian nuclear program continues as it is, within 2 years, nuclear weapons will be in Israel's, in Iran's possession. And the Israeli president, Benjamin Netanyahu, has said his country will do whatever is necessary to prevent that from happening. And he reiterated so much in his speech over last weekend, Netanyahu did. So, is Israel getting ready to bomb Iran's nuclear facilities in a preemptive strike as they did Iraq in 1981 and Syria's just 2 years ago? We don't know. But what we do know is an attack on Iran would be much more difficult than those two previous attacks. In Iran, there are a number of targets. They're either hidden or reinforced or buried deep underground. Israeli planes would have to refuel in the air to travel the over 1,000 miles from Israel to Iran. And finally, they would have to fly over the American defense system in Iraq to get there, which means that the Israelis would need to get President Obama's permission in advance, which is highly unlikely, or take the risk of going in a secret attack and being shot down en route by American air defenses in Iraq. One Israeli general I talked to last week, the former National Security Advisor, General Eiland, he said such an attack would carry less than a 50% chance of success. And at best, it would set back Iran's nuclear program just a few years. But it would certainly put a chill in U.S.-Israeli relations and possibly lead to a rupture with the only friend Israel has in the world, especially if Israel does this strike in a preemptive way without United States approval. But on the other hand, Iran regularly threatens to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. Iran's current president and potential future president, President Ahmadinejad, he denies the Holocaust ever existed. Iran supports Hezbollah and Hamas, terrorist groups who launch those on-again, off-again wars with Israel. We know Iran has tested long-range missiles capable of reaching Israel and of carrying nuclear weapons.
Well, that puts Israel in a no-win situation.
Well, Obama has made it clear that he wants better relations with the Muslim world and especially with Iran. And his Cairo speech, frankly, was an eloquent statement that the United States is now open for business and wants to deal differently with the Arab states. But Iran's elections, well, however it turns out, they may want better relations with the United States, but they don't want better relations with Israel. And they're certainly not having any indication they want to stop that nuclear program. Let's hope for everybody's sake that Obama's diplomacy, his great diplomatic skills work and bear fruit quickly, and he somehow convinces Iran to stop their nuclear program. Because if not, Israel will be faced with a very difficult choice within the next 18 months. They're going to have to make a decision before Iran takes receipt of the S-300. That's the state-of-the-art air defense system that Russia has sold to Iran but not yet delivered to Iran. Because once Iran has that, they'd be capable of shooting down Israeli aircraft. So Israel, if it's going to make a preemptive attack, has to do so before that air defense system is in place. If they don't have a preemptive attack against Iran and Obama does not stop the Iranian nuclear program, then Israel's going to be faced with a choice. Are they going to be willing to accept being in the crosshairs of Iranian nuclear weapons and learn to live with that reality? And learn to live with what will then come from Iran's nuclear weapons, which is a proliferation of nuclear weapons throughout the Middle East, as Saudi Arabia and Syria and Egypt and potentially even Turkey all feel that they need nuclear weapons to balance Iran's nuclear weapons. Because that's the world that will happen if Iran starts getting its hands on a nuclear arsenal.
How does North Korea figure in all this?
They figure in and relate very, very much so, because we know that Iran has bought things from North Korea before. They bought the missile technology. The Shahab-3 long-range missile that Iran has is based on the North Korean Taepodong missile. We know that Iran has engineers on the ground in North Korea watching the North Korean nuclear tests. And so what we can assume is that if North Korea, which will do so very quickly, has a green light or is just given a mere slap on the wrist, if North Korea goes ahead with its nuclear program, Iran can take that as a green light and permission slip for its own nuclear program. So what you would see within the next couple of years, within the next 5 years, is in Northeast Asia, Japan, South Korea, they're already starting to debate whether they need to rearm, whether they need a nuclear weapons program to balance North Korea's nuclear program. You're already starting to see in the Gulf region and in the Middle East whether the Sunni Arab states feel that they should have nuclear weapons to counterbalance the Shiite Persian nuclear weapons that Iran is bent on acquiring. So within a very short period of time, you could see a much more dangerous world. Within 5 years, you could have 6, 8 other countries, new countries, having nuclear weapons in countries which are not the most stable countries on the planet. And then it greatly increases the odds that there will be some kind of a nuclear explosion, whether by design or whether by accident or miscalculation. So that's why it's so important for President Obama and the world, frankly, to draw the line in the sand on the North Korean program and on the Iranian nuclear program. Because if they don't, we are going to be living in a much more dangerous world very, very quickly that will affect not just Israel's security or Japan or South Korea. It affects American security.
KT, thanks for the update. What's the matter with these people? Play Blue Monday.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday, oh, Tuesday. I'm so tired, got no time to play.
This is the Savage Nation, be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Dr. Peter Bregan appeared on Good Morning America this morning to talk about a new study demonstrating that stimulant drugs used to treat ADHD can cause sudden death in children caused by cardiac arrest. Terrible. He joins us now for more details on this frightening update.
The new study, just published in the American Journal of Psychiatry, confirms what I've been warning about for years in my scientific books and articles. The stimulants used to treat children for so-called ADHD can cause sudden cardiac arrest and death in kids. The stimulant group of drugs includes amphetamines like Adderall and Dexedrine, and methylphenidate products such as Ritalin, Concerta, and Focalin. The study focused on Ritalin because at the time it was more commonly used than the amphetamines, although amphetamines are probably even more toxic to the heart. The results of the study: children and youth aged 7 to 19 taking prescribed Ritalin for ADHD were 4 to 5 times more likely to die of sudden, unexplained cardiac arrest than other children who were not taking Ritalin. Despite these ominous results, the study was skewed to hide just how many children die of sudden death when taking Ritalin. The study relied heavily on identifying cases through toxicology reports at autopsy. But autopsy studies are geared to detect more massive doses from addiction and overdose, so many stimulant-caused deaths were probably missed. Also, the study excluded a large number of sudden deaths where the children had even the slightest evidence of pre-existing heart disease. They excluded these children even if the coroner didn't think the heart disease played any role in the death. For example, if a child was taking stimulants and had minimal heart disease, such as a slightly enlarged heart, they didn't blame the stimulant. They also didn't count children who were severely obese, anorexic, or suffered from asthma. But all of these children, especially ones with undetected heart disease, are much more highly at risk for stimulant-induced sudden death. They even excluded children whose parents had some forms of heart disease. Unconscionably, the study was trying not to find that stimulants can cause sudden death in children, but it did anyway. I was not surprised to find that some of the researchers are among the most big drug pushers for children around today.
Aren't cardiac deaths in children rare?
Yes, Michael, it is relatively rare, occurring in less than 1 in 100,000 children. But we need to take a few other facts into account. First, the rate is going to be much higher in children taking stimulant drugs. Not just the 4 or 5 times higher found in this study, but many more times higher when vulnerable children are included, such as kids with undetected heart disease, severe obesity, asthma, and anorexia. Second, stimulant drugs are one of the few causes of cardiac death in otherwise normal children, making it impossible to detect the risk in these kids before it happens. There is also evidence from studies of addicts and case reports that stimulants can cause heart disease, including inflammation and scarring. They commonly cause hypertension, which can lead to an enlarged heart. Yet kids with even slightly enlarged hearts were excluded. So the researchers ended up excluding kids who could have gotten their enlarged hearts from the stimulant treatment itself. As I said, this is unethical.
It's hard to imagine a greater tragedy for parents than the unexpected death of a child from taking a prescribed drug.
That's absolutely right, Michael. I've been involved as a medical expert for the family in several tragic cases like this, and they are heartbreaking to everyone who's touched by the death of the child. Years afterward, the emotional wounds remain as raw as ever for parents and brothers and sisters. Their trust for doctors and the healthcare system can be forever shattered.
What do you think the answer is to this problem?
It's simple, Michael. Don't give stimulants to children. There are far better non-drug ways to deal with so-called ADHD. After all, ADHD is supposed to involve hyperactivity, inattention, and impulsivity. Very often these children improve dramatically when parents develop a more consistent, rational, and loving plan for discipline. Sometimes the problem completely disappears when the child gets a better teacher. Often these behaviors indicate that a child is just full of life and needs more opportunity to run, to play, and to be creative. Whatever these children need, they don't need toxic drugs that lead to drug addiction, cause psychosis and depression, stunt growth, impair brain function, and even cause sudden cardiac arrest. Our children don't need drugs. They need us to protect them from misguided health professionals while we make every effort to meet their real needs in our families and schools. It's time for all of us to retake responsibility for our children. That brings us to what I call the primary principles, the refrain of my weekly report. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for all your gifts and opportunities. Become a source of love. This is psychiatrist Peter R. Bregan urging you to live like an American. You can find me and listen to all these reports and download the transcripts at Bregan.com. That's Bregin.com.
Thanks, Dr. Bregan. Cigarette packages will have warning labels that cover 50% of the front and rear. The word warning must be included in capital letters. Well, I guess that's going to go on Bonnie Frank's desk, along with his running a car company. He'll make sure the labels are big enough. Any remaining tobacco-related sponsorship of sports and entertainment events will be banned. This is unbelievable. A federal ban will be imposed on all outdoor tobacco advertising within 1,000 feet of schools and playgrounds. Half the Little Leagues will close. Are they crazy? They're not going to let tobacco companies sponsor sports and entertainment events? Look what they're cracking down on. They're not cracking down on drugs. They're not cracking down on illegal immigration. They're not cracking down on pornography. They're cracking down on cigarettes. Can you believe this? Is this not an example of Obama to the nth degree? This is Obama to the nth degree. How about cracking down on all of the wonderful actors in Hollywood where in every movie they're smoking? Why don't you go talk to Steven Spielberg and Katzenberg and Hatzenberg and Matzenberg and Ratzenberg? Tell them to not put every scene a cigarette in the hand of a teen or some cool person. Why don't you tell them that? See if Katzenberg, Ratzenberg, Matzenberg, and Ratzenberg will go along with it. What a bunch of garbage. That's all you get from these people. So all you get is a smoke screen. But if you actually look at what he's doing, raping the country, driving us over the cliff, how can you pass a healthcare reform bill and say that $800 billion is going to be needed and it's going to come from a tax increase? How is this possible? You're going to destroy the country. Destroy it. Astounding. And yet, look what he gets away with. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be back.
Savage.
Savage Nation. Monday, Blue Monday, Savage Nation. What do you think I'm going to talk about today? Myself? Nah. Not really. You know everything about me and more, so why talk about me? I think I'll talk about the world. Shots fired at huge election protest in Tehran. What can we say about it? The whole thing is fixed. You think there really was a reform candidate? The people don't want a throwback regime in Iran. There's no question about it. The girls would rather not have their bodies mutilated, et cetera, by the psycho mullahs who have hijacked Iran. We know that. It's encouraging to see protests, but you know what's going to happen to the protesters. There's another great article on my website that I have to talk about by Professor Ellis Washington that appeared first over the weekend on WorldNet Daily. It's on michaelsavage.com. And it is about me. It says, Dr. Michael Savage, Prometheus in England. And I'm going to talk about that today because it's an important story both for me and for you. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. I really want to talk about the world through a frying pan, though. And the reason I want to talk about the world through a frying pan on the Savage Nation is because if you have an open heart and an open mind, you can see the world through a raindrop. I saw it through a frying pan because I went today. Well, let me back up a bit. Last night I cooked the paella. I got fed up with eating out. I can't take it. It's not the restaurants. It's not the owners. It's not the food. I realized why I don't like restaurants. It's listening to other people talk. My problem is that I cannot tune things out. My problem is I'm in the radio business and I have very sharp ears. My problem is that I actually hear what people are saying. My problem is I hear the conversations coming from other tables and I lose my ability to eat. So I decided to start cooking at home again. I know you want to talk about the Obama health care plan. Please give me a break. I'd rather talk about diapers and how to change diapers than anything about Obama. Watch Obama run. Here's Obama apologizing in the Middle East. Watch Obama's new dog. Here's Obama having a meal. Look at Obama on Broadway. Here's Obama running. Here's Obama playing. Leave me alone already. Get the coloring book. You know what I mean? Get the Obama coloring book and just leave me out of it. So as I say, last night I decided to cook. Now, you got to understand, if you cook at home, it's an all-day process. First, you have to shop in the morning. Then you have to think about what you're going to do, and blah, blah, blah. So last night I cooked a dish that I've perfected over the years called paella. Many of you know what it is. It's basically a Spanish, you know, rice dish. On the one hand, it's very simple to cook. On the other hand, it's very complex to cook like anything else. I mean, a scrambled egg, is a scrambled egg, is a scrambled egg? No. Because there's a way to make a scrambled egg that's not like a scrambled egg. It's called piperati. It's a Spanish scrambled egg that takes about 40 minutes to make. I made that in the morning. I realized since I enjoy food so much, I would cook paella. So what I did was, by the way, Spanish is all of a sudden in. Spanish is into Italian. Everyone's getting a paella pan. They don't know what to do with it, but they got one hanging in the kitchen. So I cook paella, and I use the pan I've had for 30 years. It's not a paella pan, by the way. It's a very large stainless steel skillet with a glass top. And I'll tell you my secret in a minute. But today I went into one of those fancy cooking stores that has all these items that you think you need but you never use. And I remember my mother cooked on a four-burner electric stove in a kitchen you could hardly walk through, and she turned out three gourmet meals a day, twice a day if she had to, on four electric burners with aluminum pots. But we go into these stores and we buy thousands of dollars worth of kitchenware that we never use. So I went in and was thinking of cheating on my 30-year-old skillet. I was looking at new varieties of the same pan. Some were deeper, some were shinier. Some had elaborate scroll work on them. Some had incredible handles on them. And the more I thought about it, the more I rejected each new item. I said, well, what's wrong with the pan I've got? It's worked for 30 years. I think I'll just keep it. Well, an elderly lady who works at the store, and I had a chat about frying pans, and so she showed me the varieties of stainless steel skillets, and then she showed me the latest variety of skillet. And she said, I said, but that's a non-stick surface. I don't want that. She said, yes, but this is a non-toxic non-stick surface. It doesn't release any particles. And I said, well, my body has gotten used to these non-stick particles, and I don't think my body would do very well without an occasional particle of non-stick surface in my cells. And we both had a big laugh over that. And I said, you know, you and I grew up in the same generation. Apparently today they're afraid of everything. There are so many filters, filtered air, filtered water, filtered words, filtered teaching, filtered thoughts, so that when a child is exposed to a single bad word, they fall apart crying and wonder where mommy is. They can't even play tag now with big mommy watching over them. The police state of mommy. We both laughed over that as well. Then I told her a story of a time when I was a child and my father took me by the hand through the meanest streets of New York's Lower East Side where he had a small store. And if I recall, it was during the polio epidemic. And he said to me, don't worry about it. By exposing you to all of these germs, you're not going to get polio. Of course, I didn't get polio, thank God. But the fact of the matter is recent studies have shown that children who grow up in houses that have the least amount of dust and the least amount of antigens are generally the sickliest. That is precisely because, as my father taught me, children who are not exposed to various microorganisms or antigens don't develop the capacity to resist them when they are. In fact, it reminds me of another story, which was the arrival of the European explorers into the South Pacific. Hardy men like Greek gods. Healthy, hardy Greek men like gods were the locals, particularly in the Marquesas, a place I've been to many years ago. The men looked like, just like Adonis. So the seamen from Europe arrive, and they bring various European diseases that the local people in these islands had never been exposed to. And subsequently, 90% of the population acquires the disease and dies. I think it was, I don't want to guess wrongly, I've forgotten by now. The point is they had no immunity to this disease, although they were strong as gods, because they had not developed any immunity to the new diseases that were brought in by the European seamen. They got the diseases and died. Same thing. You need to expose yourself and your children to various and sundry. And so here we are coming full circle. Which frying pan should I buy? The lady and I then went over to the ironware section, and she said, aha, now that's the stuff that the West was built on. Yeah, and I said, I remember the days when it was said we needed ironware, cookingware, in order to get a bit of iron in our food. She said, yep, that's where True Grit came from. The men had steel in their bodies, and we had a laugh over that as well. And I said to her, you can see the world through a frying pan if you look carefully enough. And she said, is that your next book? And I said, wait a minute, do you know who I am? She said, no. And I replied, well, I'm a famous author and broadcaster. She said, well, I'll have to look for that title. I said, I think you'll be waiting quite a while for it, as I walked out of the frying pan store. First of all, no one uses saffron in a restaurant. It's too expensive. What they use are coloring matters and cheap crocus rather than the actual saffron. I have a lot of good saffron, and the paella is good, but you don't want to eat it too. I mean, saffron's hard to eat every day. What I love is it's basically a peasant fisherman's dish. They turn everything into, they turn into a gourmet this, gourmet that. You have to buy $5 million worth of products to make basically rice and whatever seafood the fisherman caught and threw into the pan cooked on a wood fire. Everything they turn into a shtick. Like, you got to be a genius to make it. I lived in Spain for a while. Remember, they made the workers. They made a fire out of some wood and whatever they found on the beach. They had a rusty old pan. They threw in some rice. They toasted it. Then they threw in whatever, this shellfish. They all mixed it together, whatever they could find in, a little of this, a little of that. Then they threw in the rice and covered it, and that's the end of it. And, you know, now everybody's an expert on paella. You know that they say that the most desirable kind of paella, a rice dish, is when it's toasted on the bottom? You know how the kids always like to eat the skin of a turkey? They always want the turkey skin, right? The crisper, the better. And we used to eat it when we were young. Now, oh, don't throw the fat away. Throw the skin away. Everything, all the good parts, throw away. Throw the feet away. Throw the fat away. Don't bring the gizzards home. I would rather it be made in a factory. I want a stainless steel turkey, you know, from the imaginary kitchen that had no guts. But anyway, so it's the same with the rice. Theoretically, the bottom should be caramelized. The bottom of the rice in the pan. The most prized part of the dish is the caramelized rice on the bottom. Not black, not burnt, but caramelized rice. Very hard to do because usually if you cook it sufficiently, it'll burn on the bottom in order to cook the top, no matter how many times you stir it. So I developed my own trick, which I'm not going to tell you. I think I'll sell the advice in a cookbook. I drank an old bottle of wine. I got a mild headache. I can't drink wine this time yet. It's terrible. I have the greatest wine collection of my life. I finally built it up. I can't drink any of it. I'm still back to beer and vodka. And I try to change it. All right, there's a bottle that you found that you used to drink. Wonderful white wine. A smasher on me. You wouldn't believe it all night long. A nightmare. A nightmare headache. But that's not why I don't want to do politics. What do you want me to say? What's there to say that you don't already know? North Korea is threatening nuclear war, and we're doing nothing. We're talking about socialized medicine. Obama rushes to Chicago to tell the doctors why lawsuits against doctors are good. And they boo him, and they cut the booze out of MSNBC. You hear this? The media is more controlled here than it is in Iran. At least they can protest in Iran after a presidential election. We had Acorn fix the election. No one said a word. If you say anything, they call you Nazi here in the country. I know what it is. China, the junkyard dog is called North Korea. Make it growl to frighten anyone in the administration who says anything about the Chinese currency manipulations or their dumping of products on America, destroying our manufacturing base. So the next day, threatens another nuclear war. And I love Hillary Clinton, a really functional Secretary of State. We've passed the law that's full of no teeth. It's like a toothless old woman, what they passed in the U.N. He really cares what they say in the U.N. I'm not depressed out of all of this. Whatever happens, happens. I become fatalistic at this point. This is the Savage Nation. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Savage.